Blog Talk Radio.
We got this.
Welcome to the war room. We got Dez, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the Hot Block Commander.
Give it to you. How you wanna end up 1 or 2 hour show to keep the brain running with the premise of talk sports on a national level. Bold with the topic, sort of like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five during prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine and sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26 or the war in Kuwait. It's the war room with five knights at the round table. Five Philly guys, diversified and educated.
Yes, sir. What's good, War Room family? We are back in the building. You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports, of course. I'm Jimmy the Blueprint Williams, and I'm here with the HBC, B. Austin. What's up, homie?
Yo, daddy's back!
Let's talk some sports. You already know, man. LeBron goes off, puts up 61, and one NBA legend isn't impressed. We'll talk about that. Also, Bubba Chuck, AI, is in the Raptors. We'll discuss some of his greatest moments. Right now, though, make sure you join us in the JW Philly Realty chat room at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom, or join us on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those are at War Room Sports. So you can join the conversation while the show is live. You can also call us directly when we open up the Digital Extreme Technologies hotline, and that number is 323-410-0012. During the week, make sure you take some time to hear more great sports talk from some of our future network mates. Don't forget to check out Roy and Chris on the Broad Street Line every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. Great show this past week with the author of the Showtime book. I took a look at that, listened to that podcast. It was excellent. Also, the homie Brandon Pemberton on Sports Trap Radio, the hardest working man in sports talk, every Thursday afternoon from noon to 2 p.m. He's also on Blog Talk Radio. Both are featured on an upcoming War Room Sports podcast network. You know what I'm saying? Like, in case you didn't know, we have our own network jumping off with all kinds of sports shows, culture shows. We'll talk about a little bit of everything.
Second quarter is on and popping.
Your cats have no clue what we're about to do. But anyway, in addition to that, we are also have a network show, which is this show, The War Room. You can catch this on newviberadio.com, 7 a.m., 1 p.m., and 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And on Sunday and Tuesday at 3 p.m., we're on fatsradio.com, P-H-A-T-Z, like pretty hot and tempting, but it's with a Z, fatsradio.com. We're also on those two networks, The War Room, but just stay in tune with everything we're doing by going to warroomsports.com. You can get everything there, the mobile app links, our YouTube channel, Google+, Facebook, you name it, we do it. You know what I mean? We about that business, B. Austin, but let's tell everybody what happened real quick while they were on the grind. Let's jump right into these topics.
Absolutely.
Here, brother. You ready? Let's go.
Absolutely. You already know.
No doubt. While you were on the grind, it's brought to you by DirecTV. If you like a better TV experience than cable has to offer, which includes the NFL Sunday Ticket, go to our website, warroomsports.com, click on the DirecTV logo, and order a better TV experience at a discounted War Room Sports sign-up rate. If you call yourself a sports fan, you got to have a DirecTV because, listen, it isn't the Red Zone package. This is the Sunday Ticket. You can watch the games and then chop it up with us and tell us who stinks.
All games.
Let's go, though. Let's talk some sports, man. Let's talk some sports, good brother. Let's talk about what happened at the CIAA party, yo. And for those who don't know, CIAA takes place in Carolina, man. Like, there were shots fired. I know Fab and, Diddy were in the building. My question to you is, B. Austin, why can't we? You know I mean, why can't we all just get along? Why every time we get together, something like this got to pop off?
Yo, I really don't have much thoughts about this. All, as Heather B would say, all Glocks dance. yo, put the straps away. I mean, my man Wayne Perry is going away forever. Pappy Mason is going away forever. All the legitimate, real, still, old head murder game masters are gone. So you young boys, the crack ain't moving like that. So why is y'all tripping? You're in the party shooting. I actually, like, I somewhat consider myself a pseudo tough guy. Not so much because I'll knock you the F out. which I will knock you the F out. It's about who see who first. But it's more so about I'm not ready to back down for nothing. My thing is, when I'm in the party, I could care less about another man and an altercation. My mind is 100% focused on drinking, consuming alcohol, and young ladies. Or, in this case, my wife, because now I'm an old head and I'm corny and I go to the club with my wife, who's a very beautiful woman, you know, and hopefully she got something tight on. I'm not thinking about shooting up the club unless it's shooting up my wife's club. Like,
yo,
what are you guys
what
doing?
I'm saying is this, though, man. I mean, you know, a lot of dudes, right, this, a lot of it happens over these young ladies, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, a lot of these Sharkeishas out here getting cats in trouble. But at the end of the day, I think that a lot of dudes just can't rumble no more. Or the fact of the matter
that's a great
is
point.
They don't even know
point.
If they can rumble because – you know what I mean? Like you said, all Glocks down, but this is what they're reaching for first. Like, it used to be a thing that escalated. You started at a fist fight, you know, somebody might get hit with a bat, somebody might get stabbed, and then eventually sometimes it worked its way up. But
then we go,
then we go
to the trunk. So what you're saying is they don't even go to the trunk anymore. They just sneak it in around the metal detectors.
You already know,
man. To begin.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of out of control, man. I like how all the headlines, and I tried to do it too, like Fab and Diddy were the building. There is no, we don't even know if they had anything to do with it, but the fact of the matter is they make the story sound better, so you got to throw that in there. You know what I'm saying?
Yo, Diddy has a history of guns in the club, though, so, you know, he brought that upon himself.
Yeah. I mean, this is true, man. I mean, at the end of the day, man, y'all dudes need to get your mind on something else. Stop trying to be tough, man.
Notice how we bring up the CIAA and we have no commentary on the games that occurred or who won the tournament.
Not at all. All I'm saying is,
yo,
why you
shout
in the club,
out to
man?
Boone State.
Yo, why you in the club, man? Take a page out of Iron Mike's book, man. Why
did you
in the club?
Are you talking out of turn?
No, I think we're all talking together.
I normally don't do interview with women unless I fornicate with them. So you shouldn't talk.
So,
you know what I'm saying? Yeah, I mean, pretty much. You know, get your mind somewhere else, man. Stop trying to be tough, yo. Yeah, but we didn't mention the CIAA. And this next story, I don't think we'll actually mention the sports connection as well, but I still find it interesting. Allen ISD closed a $60 million stadium due to cracks in the concourse. Now, for those who don't know, this is a high school.
Explain, talk to them about
a high school stadium. A high school stadium in Texas, they had to close. It's going to affect some of their home games or what have you. But the story here is, why does a high school team have a $60 million stadium? I mean, I remember high school football. We didn't have a $60 million stadium.
Everything is bigger in Texas. I can attest to that. Everything is bigger in Texas. I think it's ridiculous. I don't know why you have to have a $60 million stadium, but coming from Howard University, which is a Division I AA football team, I can say that we had a $60 stadium. We had a $60 stadium. So, they're playing in much better facilities than a historically black college university or historically black college institution. I don't have much on this either. It is what it is. Texas, California, Florida, and on the low, Pennsylvania, you're going to see a lot of money invested. And Georgia, I'll throw Georgia. You're going to see a lot of money invested into high school football.
Yo, here's
those
my question.
Places, no one does it like Texas, though. No one.
No one does it like Texas. That was my next question. My next question is this, all right? And I want you to think about this. If you had to build a team, right? Would you want all Texas players or all Florida players? Let's say Texas versus Florida when it comes to high school football. Who you riding with?
In high school.
Now, not once they make it to the pros or the collegiate level, but if we're talking high school, because we know that both states are fanatical. They're just out of control when it comes to high school athletics.
Jimmy, this is one of the greatest questions that you've ever asked me.
I mean, this is what I do, though.
You know why? Because I want to say Florida just because of the raw athleticism. That's like the only place in the world that I met a grown-ass 13-year-old. He was a grown man at 13.
They don't speak English, though.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, and they don't speak English. But now as the game of football has evolved and it becomes more of a passing game, it also becomes more of a thinking game. And they breed quarterbacks in Texas. So now I'm trying to think about that factor. If you'd have asked me this question 10 years ago, I'd have went Florida all day long, no question. 20 years ago, I'd have said you were stupid for asking. But right now in 2014 and the passing camps that they have, I actually might go. I might go. And then I'm going to surprise you and say I wouldn't pick Florida second. I might pick California second.
Yeah, I figured you were going there. They're the dark horse. They're the dark horse because, you know, that's where the quarterbacks come from. I mean, actually,
right.
I mean, a lot of quarterbacks as well as running backs, you know, a lot of players come out of California. So you're saying that California is two, Texas is still one in your eyes, though?
Texas is one because you're going to get the best of the athleticism, you're going to get the best of the QB, and you're going to get defensive intensity, not just athleticism, which is what I know Florida for. If you look at the rankings, I'm not aware of too many great quarterbacks coming out of Florida. Are you? You can literally run a map over Texas, and you've got 6 to 7 NFL quarterbacks right now on rosters.
I mean, yeah, no, I agree. I mean, you know, that is the most important position on a football team, so I could see that. I just thought it was an interesting question because, I mean, a $60 million stadium for a high school team, that would only happen in a couple
of
places. Texas, California, possibly Florida. But, you know, in Florida, they don't need $60 million stadium.
You know my problem with that, and you know, I'm going to jump into my socialist bag really quickly. Like,
let's go.
I have to see the test scores and the academic value of that school district and compare that to what they invest in football. Because I'm like, $60 million, you could have shaved $50 million off of that budget and spent $10 million and invested that other $50 in things that would better the academic quality of the school district. Now, mind you, coming from where we come from, at $10 million in a high school stadium, we'd still be making fun of them. But at least you've taken $50 million and invested it into academics, which is the intention or the purpose of school.
Yeah.
But rather than put $60 million, you could build right now, you could build 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
You could build 10, 20 Howard University stadiums. 20.
This is true, man. This is true. Like you said, we have to see the test scores before we can, like, really pass judgment. But it's still an interesting story nonetheless. When I read it, I was like, okay, this is a semi-pro. Not even semi-pro. Like, this is high school. Anyway, man, next story real quick. Let's talk about your man Andre Drummond, the NBA player Andre Drummond, of course. He is accused of leaking Jeanette McCurdy's – of people don't know who that is. That's iCarly, by the way. She has some racy pics, man.
That's the other chick on iCarly. That's not
Well,
I
she's
Carly
from iCarly. She'll put it that way. She's from iCarly.
Yeah, she's from the show. Right.
She's known from being on iCarly, but it's not iCarly.
Her name, for those of you parents –
not saying I watch iCarly.
Children,
I'm just saying as a for instance.
I have to admit that I do. I got a 9-year-old daughter. So I actually am familiar with the show. The young lady in question is Sam. We're talking about Sam. Go ahead.
Got you. Good clarification right there. Well, she had racy pics that leaked. You know, she had some scantily clad pictures leak. Andre Drummond is her ex, and they accused him of leaking it. He's like, look, I don't know what's going on. But meanwhile, yo, people were, like, threatening his life on Twitter. There were dudes like, yo, I'll come to your practice and see you.
I got to be honest with these young African American gentlemen. I mean, I know we live in what, you know, purports to be a progressive society, but listen, we're not too far off from the land of Dixie, and there's a lot of Riley rebels out here that's not going to take kindly to you punishing the physical virtues of a nice Caucasian young blonde lady. So watch. watch yourself. You're the big, 6'10" black dude with a little white girl. Like, come on, you had to know what was gonna go down.
He attacked the good white Nubian ladies. You know what I mean, and he has to understand, like you said, man. Yo, you got to be careful out there, B. My thing is this, though. He took time to respond to cats. Like, he went on Twitter himself and said, listen, I got nothing to do with it, yada, yada, yada. You got to learn to let that be, yo. Like, I'm not Andre Drummond, but I get slandered, too. And I just block, yo, I'm like Mutombo. I will block somebody, yo. I block people on text messages, Twitter. I love them, too, but I love blocking them. I love, because I know when they look, they salty. Like, you know what I'm saying? So I love blocking people. But I'm like Mutombo out there, man. But he responds to the slander. You know, and makes it a bigger story than what it really had to be. If you didn't, and
making
of course,
himself look kind
of and of course, she put him out there too. She was on a podcast saying, "Yeah, he leaked my pictures, yada yada yada." But my thing is, like, yo, if you out here giving these young Caucasian women cavities, you need to, like, you know, be careful, man. That's all I'm gonna say, man. And the words of B. Austin, man, we ain't that far removed from Dixieland.
Yo, and I know that they love BBC, and if you don't know what BBC is, you got Google. My thing with that is, here's how I know that I'm getting old. Here's how I know that I'm old. I know I'm old. So I think of her within the context of iCarly, and if you know her character on the show, she is the furthest thing from sexy. Like, she's very tomboyish in a unattractive type of way. So when I see these pictures, two things register in my mind. I'm like, okay. Like, I see what's going on here. Like, she's definitely more developed than I would have thought. But as I'm looking, I'm like, yo, that's Sam from iCarly. Like, this isn't sexy. Like, my daughter looks at her. Like, it didn't even process her.
Well, see, here's the thing, though.
You started
off by saying, I know I'm old. But here's the thing. The fact of the matter is, you're not that old. Because when you become the dirty old man, when you become the old man, then that changes. Your vantage point changes. Like, you're looking at her different because you're a dirty old man. It doesn't matter that your daughter watches her when I Carly. So you're not that old, man. So give yourself some credit, because you're still able to
but
put it in
like,
context
it was
to say,
fun,
that's Sam,
it was
yo.
Funny because she's not even attractive, but not because she's ugly. I'm like, yo, she's a little girl. So then I'm thinking, Andre Drummond. So now I understand. I'm not condoning where these people are coming from, but you know how you have a certain perception of even Miley Cyrus being a little kid's father. You still think of this actress in that context. So I'm quite sure that those with less mental capacity than mine still associate Sam with being a teenage girl in like 10th or 11th grade, and they're looking at Andre Drummond probably being older than he actually is, because he's a young boy. He's only in his early 20s, like 20, 21. So he's young, but he looks much older. So they're associating grown, tall, huge, 7-foot black guy with young, tiny, small, high school white girl.
Well, here's
you know
the thing,
that's
though.
Gonna go.
I know where that's going to go. I know. But here's the thing, though. How old is she? And I'm asking that because, you know, a lot of times when people are on TV playing teenagers, they be like 20s and damn near in their 30s. So.
I'm sure that she's in her early 20s. I'm almost positive that she's not a teenager.
I get what you're saying, though. It's still going to fit the old Jack Johnson stereotype when just from the outside looking in, like, yo, you know, he's punishing her for past crimes. But the fact of the matter is, man, he said he didn't do it. You know what I mean? He probably didn't do
it.
Matter of fact, Jimmy,
she's 22. She's 22.
Okay.
Yeah,
there you go.
22.
There you go.
So she's
the same age as he.
Yeah,
I don't watch iCarly, so being Sam means absolutely nothing to me. Anyway, man, let's move on, man, because we're literally talking about iCarly, B. Like, yo, iCarly, though? Anyway, let me ask you a question about this. The New York Knickerbockers, the Knicks are back, we know. Their fans are set to protest James Dolan outside of Madison Square Garden on March 19th prior to the Pacers game. Now, for those who don't know, James Dolan is the owner. And I know a lot of people slander Carmelo now. I got in a long debate with Fred Perdue the other day, who loves to slander. Carmelo, listen, though, Carmelo is the easy guy to slander right now because the Knicks stink. Fact of the matter is, it's not his fault. I mean, ownership is out of control. The moves they made the team worse. How do you do that? Anyway, with that being said, what do you think about the Knicks fans, the Knickerbockers in general, and James Dolan and the job he's doing running the New York Knicks?
They're well within their rights. You know, I am a Philadelphia 76ers fan, so I celebrate every failure of the New York Knickerbockers within that context. But putting on my analyst hat and really analyzing what the Knicks organization has done over the course of the last decade, first of all, they've always been an overrated organization because when you say what championships have they won, you have to go back to the 70s. A lot of us weren't alive when Willis Reed limped out on the court and all of that. So from that perspective, but they do have a bit of a legacy, at least for being competitive. James Dolan has done nothing but throw hog monkey trash on that legacy of at least competition. And from my perspective, when I look at their salary versus the salary cap and the deals that they have on the books, they don't have anything of value to even really give away to start making roster improvements. So the educated fan is not only protesting the fact that they're trash this year, he's protesting the fact that James has made business moves that are based on unsound decisions that have put them behind the eight ball for the foreseeable future. They can't correct some of the mistakes he's made in the next two seasons.
I understand what you're saying.
They're down for the count for the foreseeable future. So if I was a Knicks fan, I'd be throwing police horse dookie at his Lincoln Town Car every time he came out of Madison Square Garden. So I can completely
It's interesting because the thing about it is being in New York, a lot of times you get overrated. Like a lot of things in New York are overrated. But when you do bad, I mean, the spotlight is on you. I read an article in Newsweek a couple days ago, and they called him the Albert Einstein of incompetence. I'm like, damn. So he's really taking a beating right now. And
Jimmy,
he made
a
lot of bad decisions.
They gave a long-term contract to an injured power forward who now amounts to a backup 19-minute-per-game bencher. And he's on a nine-figure deal that has two more seasons left. You can't trade that away because what do you get in return to match the salaries? Then Melo is not a bad deal. And we can talk all day. I think we'll get to Melo later on in the show. Man, I've watched the Knicks play, and it has nothing to do with Carmelo Anthony. His team is.
But Amari robbed him blind. Like Amari got a max deal. First off, Amari should get half of his salary to LeBron because Amari got paid because LeBron shunned the Knicks. They put all their eggs in one basket in terms of trying to get LeBron. When that didn't work out, they had to pay somebody, and they went and paid Amari. Amari robbed him blind. Now he's just running around New York in tight clothes, enjoying himself, spending that money. Like, have you seen this dude lately? He's out of control right now.
There's that deal, and then there's even the J.R. Smith deal, who in and of itself isn't a bad deal. It's not a bad deal. In fact, I thought they got J.R. at value. But the fact that he can leverage that to get his brother, who is not an NBA basketball player, a $1 million contract, like stuff like that is crazy.
JR did, you could look at it a couple ways. But my thing is, I think it may be a bad deal just because, like, JR did what he had to do, but it was his contract year. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the old Derek Coleman joke. When your contract comes up, you play out of your mind, you get your contract, and you go back to
the No, but you know what, Jimmy? My thing with JR, here's my thing with JR. And if I had a rooting interest in JR Smith, believe me, he's out enough in the public. I'd have given him a rumble. I don't know what would have happened, but if he was on my Sixers, I'd give him a rumble. But being objective, J.R. Smith is the type of dude, the way he played last year, if he would have gotten that $8 million a year or that $10 million a year we expected, you know, the playoffs actually helped the Knicks from a financial standpoint because they could hang their hats on that and say, look, we're only going to give you $6.5 million a year. Because look what you did in the playoffs. J.R. Smith is worth six and a half. So now he's stinking it up, but it's easy to see where you bring in two or three good components, you straighten the team out, you get a stern coach, and J.R. Smith is going to fall back in line. He's in the middle of his prime. His production isn't going to go down, I don't believe. He's going to be a player that can give you 18 to 20 a night off the bench and explode for 40 points three times a season. He's equivalent to Jamal Crawford, only he's a head kick. So I'm not mad at that deal. I'm not mad at that deal, but because everything else is bad, he's not going to be your shining and redeeming light. He's a head kick. Everything else bad, he's just going he's going to fall in line and be bad in class like everybody else.
Yo, here's my thing, though. I just got one thing to say to your man, Amari. Yo, Amari, you got to stop walking around looking all crazy like that.
And it ain't no Ralph, though. It ain't Ralph level.
But let me ask you this. I'm asking
What's
you.
The name of your clothing line? We don't know.
Yo, here's what there I want you to do, B. Austin. Tell everybody who's giving a birthday shout-out real quick so we can move on.
Oh, man, we got to talk about the birth. It's birthday time? Yo, birthday
Absolutely.
Time is one of my absolute favorites. Can you cue that up for me, brother?
You already know. Let's go.
Birthday. This
let's
week,
go.
let's talk about happy birthday to one Michael Finley, former wingman, well-known around the league, three- or four-time All-Star, turns 41. Greg Ostertag. Michael Finley is 41. Greg Ostertag is 41. Shaq Diesel Daddy Twism O'Neal is 42. Eric Sleepy Floyd is 54. Happy birthday to those gentlemen, man. Yo,
yo
Sleepy Floyd is 54.
Quick question.
That's why I feel like I'm old, yo. How
couple things. 54? Michael Finley, right? Michael Finley won a dunk contest. I remember Michael Finley in Wisconsin when Michael Finley was one of the greatest players coming out of college at the time. And he was another one of those guys who was supposed to be Mike, which I find funny. But he was a solid player. But I don't know if he lived up to the hype because everybody said he was Mike. That's Michael Finley. Second thing, you said Greg Ostertag and then Shaq. They share a birthday, which I find hilarious. And you know why, because they used to go at it. Shaq smacked him. So I find that funny. All right, Eric Sleepy Floyd. Yo, he has one of the greatest nicknames in the history of the NBA, but he's 54 years old, yo. Eric Sleepy Floyd is 54. Yo. That's all I want to say. Like, yo, we're old at this point. Anyway, man,
yo,
before we
old.
Move on.
Like, we're old. How are these guys middle-aged? Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. We're definitely old. We got a couple more topics to get to. Before we do, B. Austin, tell everybody how to get in touch with us.
Yes, sir. Ladies, gentlemen, fans, boys and girls, lowlifes, speedballers, molly poppers, alcohol sippers, check out our website at warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the War Report, our weekly newsletter. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message to us about the company, our show, or inquiries about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. While you're browsing the site, be sure and click on the memorabilia tab to buy cool War Room Sports merchandise. Click the blog tab to read our latest sports articles from contributors all over the globe in All Fair and Sports and War. That's the name of the blog, and it is a hot name. Click on the respective icons to like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to us on iTunes Podcast, download our free War Room Sports mobile apps on Android Marketplace or the iTunes or Apple Store, whatever it's called. Watch our videos at warroomsportstv.com. And make sure that you join the J.W. Fieldy Realty chat room right now as you're listening during the show. It's blogtalkradio.com/the War Room. To enter the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. And if you don't want to do that, create an account, just go ahead and sign in through your Facebook or your Twitter accounts. And while you're at it, click follow, updates, and reminders about the show. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room during the show.
Yo, man, you all right, good brother?
I'm good. Dial the digital extreme Technology Hotline at 323-410-0012. She's under the table. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already, just press 1.
Yo, man, just make sure you're all right, man. Couple times there, you sound like you you know, you smoking some Marley or something, man. You good, man? You relaxing
something, man?
Twirling. Oh, getting a let me be quiet. Anyway, man, listen. Let's move on, though. We got some hot topics to talk about, and let's pay some bills. Hot topics are brought to you by Audible. If your schedule is too hectic to read as much as you want, try audiobook, cook back, and let someone else do the reading for you. Go to audibletrial.com/warroomsports. By the way, currently I just finished a Wilt Chamberlain book, and I will be writing a review about that book because Wilt Chamberlain made a lot of statements which I find interesting. Just to give you guys a couple of examples of what Chamberlain said.
Yes.
He said he left the Sixers to go play for the Lakers because there were more beautiful blonde women in L.A. I found that interesting. Also, by the way, another Wilt quote, Wilt said that if he slept with a young lady, he wouldn't sleep with her again unless she brought a friend. So I found that interesting. But with that being said, though, right now I just started a book called Showtime. It's about the Lakers dynasty of the 80s. You can get these books and plenty of other books at Audible. So go to audibletrial.com/warroomsports, and you can actually get a book free because that's our hookup, because that's our sponsor. So go to audibletrial.com/warroomsports. Couple questions, man. First one is a serious question. Mike McCreary at Penn State, it's come out that he was abused himself as a little boy, which is why he felt sympathy when it came to the Jerry Sandusky case, and he put everything out there. Does this shock you at all?
No. No, it doesn't shock me. There's very little that shocks me now in this day and age and time, and I think things like that are far more prevalent than we would like to think. People just don't talk about them, you know, and I can recall at an earlier stage in my life, not too long ago, just doing a personal survey amongst young ladies that I knew and just kind of asking them, you know, about sexual assault and rape and the number of women that have endured that horrendous act would shock maybe it wouldn't shock you, but it shocked the hell out of me. I had no idea that it's so prevalent. Like, what monsters are walking around behind a mask of a handshake and a smile? And, you know, it's nuts. It's crazy. So I say all that to say, no, it doesn't shock me that Mike McCreary has gone through something like that. It doesn't shock me. I think that God, you know, I'm taking it there. I think God revealed this for a purpose. I think that this whole ordeal came out into the open to make us more aware of protecting our children, to make us more aware of what
truly goes on. Oh, you're talking about the entire thing. You're not talking about Mike McCreary. You're talking about the entire situation, right?
Yeah, the entire situation.
I was about to say, like,
and Mike McCreary is a central figure in it. He's a central figure because he's the one that, you know, so that's just kind of my take. But no, I'm not shocked that he's endured.
I mean, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked. They say the statistic says that 1 in 4 women will be sexually assaulted in their lifetime. And I know that statistic because I love Law and Order SVU, you know, so I watch it all the time, and that's one of the statistics they talk about. But with that being said, it's not shocking to me either. Just want to get your opinion on it, man. Now let's move into another topic because I don't want to sit here and talk about sexual assault all day. Let's talk about some NFL football. Your guy, Peyton Manning, the Denver Broncos quarterback, the quarterback of my team. It's my quarterback in my TO voice. He's been cleared to play in 2014, which guarantees him $20 million. Here's my question, though. For the Broncos, it's going to be difficult to get over what happened in the Super Bowl. But is Peyton Manning, do you think he has another year similar to how he played this year left? Because, I mean, he played out of his mind. Can he get any better? Like, when is Father Time going to win this game right here?
Jimmy, I believe that Peyton Manning can play at the level that he's currently playing. Not replicating that season, not replicating those numbers, but I'll give you an example. I see Peyton Manning going over 4,400 yards. I see Peyton Manning being above 65% completions. I see Peyton Manning being over 30 touchdowns for the next 2 seasons.
Hold on. We got to preface this by saying that you are an admitted Peyton Manning stan, and you think he's the greatest to ever play. I just want to give this some context. I'm not saying he won't do that. I actually hope
fine.
He does do that.
That's fine. You can chop the tree out from underneath my credibility, and I have to accept that because those things are true. But here's why. Peyton Manning, and I think you will agree with me, doesn't necessarily play the game from a purely physical standpoint. 75%, maybe 80% of what you're getting with him is mental sharpness. And I actually believe that a guy like Peyton Manning can continue to improve from a mental standpoint. I think he's plateaued physically, but mentally what he does, which is drop back, not many rollouts, not much athleticism, be able to deliver the ball down the field 20, 25 yards tops. He still, you know, they go deep once or twice a game. You know, 20, 25 yards. He can continue to do that until he's 40. Hell, if Vinny Testaverde can do it at 45, Peyton Manning can do it for 42. I'm not saying he will, but I give him another two seasons as being at the top of his game. Definitely. Now, the issue is your squad. That's a whole other conversation. I think that he took an underwhelming underwhelming type of talent and had it performing.
I don't care whether he
peak.
Does those things that he did last year. I just want to win the championship.
Right.
And I'm going to be perfectly honest. I don't even know how they bounced back to make it to the bowl because, to me, the loss the year before was much more devastating than even the Super Bowl loss. But somehow they made it back. So this season is going to be very difficult because literally no game will matter until you get to the bowl. Now, Champ Bailey, I hear Champ Bailey is being let go.
No, that opinion is – that's your opinion.
Of course it is. Of course it is. I mean, at the end of the day, I guarantee you Peyton feels the same way. You think Peyton cares if he comes out and throws 50 touchdowns if he doesn't win the championship?
No.
Peyton
no,
wants to get another ring,
no,
bro.
I don't think that. I don't think that he necessarily cares about the statistics or the numbers, but you have to care about the game. You have to – that feeds into that whole cliche that we fight against, which is championships are everything. No, championships aren't everything. They're a very big piece of why you play the game, but they're not the entire reason. You play to be competitive. You play to win.
Yeah, you do play to win the game, Herm Edwards' voice. But here's my thing. I agree with you, but when you're Peyton Manning and you have every statistic, he's not playing for money. Peyton Manning, you know, he's got money. He's getting $20 million. He don't need no money. So he's not playing for money. He's not playing for statistics. He has most of the statistics that any quarterback would want to have. At this point, he's playing for one reason and one reason only. For him to go through the brunt of playing an entire NFL season, he has one goal he wants to accomplish. So I kind of think that he would agree with me in the essence that, yo, it doesn't matter what he does in a regular season. It really doesn't. It really doesn't. I think that he would enjoy stinking it up if he can win a championship.
I think that's a quote-unquote sexy cliche because it sounds profound. So, yeah, he may agree with you in the media, but I think that football players, that goes to the, you know, the Charles Barkley's of the world and guys like that. You know, no, Charles doesn't have a ring, but Charles won a lot of games. Charles had
Charles is a Hall of Fame, but what I'm saying is for Peyton Manning, it's different. Like, I think it depends upon what athletes you're talking about. Now, we're not talking about Aaron Rodgers. We're not talking about even a Drew Brees or even a Ben Roethlisberger or a Tony. We're talking about Peyton Manning, who's been considered the top guy for years. I mean, him and Brady are the two guys who've been considered that guy. So my thing is, for him, it's a little different than most quarterbacks. It may be cliche for most quarterbacks. I just want to win games. I just want to win the championship. But for Peyton, that's the only thing left to do. I mean, what is he going to do? Like, get more records? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, for him, that's all. That's all there's left to do is win championships.
Right.
Anyway, man, fact of the matter is this. He's making $20 million. He's going to play, so he's going to have to play at a high level. Man, I also don't want to see him go out sort of how it looks Kobe may, unless Kobe comes back and plays at a high level. I hate to see guys stay around a little bit too long. You don't want to see him go out with an injury. You know what I mean? Like, you want to see him go out playing the game at a high level. So we're going to hope that he does play.
I agree with that. Now, I wanted to address that Kobe point, but I'm going to save it for later.
Yeah, save that for later, man. Right. Save it for later. I know that you still think Kobe can average 30 a game, but let's save that for later, though. Let's talk about
25.
This. Another quarterback. 25? Oh, I respect that. Another quarterback in the news. Jerry Jones considers himself the smartest guy in the room, and he's doing some Enron math to kind of cut salary back with the Dallas Cowboys. Yo, what I just said was so ill, and most people won't even catch it. Anyway,
yo,
according to a source, the team will convert $12.5 million of Romo's $13.5 million base salary into a signing bonus. This drops his cap figure from $21.773 million to $11.773 million. Romo signed a six-year extension last year worth $108 million that included $55 million in guaranteed money. They basically designed this contract to be restructured in the second year of the deal to create cap room now. So the Cowboys are trying to be slick with the cap to get under this cap. So they're pretty much giving Romo his money, just restructuring how they do it. Now, I'm going to add this to that. The Cowboys, right, also they want Ware to take a pay cut. So my thing is they're making sure Romo gets his money, but they want Ware to take a pay cut. And Jerry Jones is, like, finagling the cap to do what he has to do. So what do you think about Romo's deal after this past season? And also, Ware, how important do you think DeMarcus Ware is to the Cowboys?
I know it's popular to bash Tony Romo and whatnot. First of all, as an Eagles fan, I just want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart to Jerry Jones. Just continue doing what you're doing. We of Eagles Nation and the rest of the NFC East, we really appreciate it. You know, you looked out. You have continued to be the bastion of mediocrity in the NFL for 20 years running now. So I appreciate everything that you're doing. And speaking of hot lyrics and verbiage, shout out to Charlie Clips and Loaded Lux. You know, y'all got to come on the show, talk sports, battle rap and sports go hand in hand.
That was random.
I think that Jerry, with where Tony Romo puts them in terms of being competitive, what he can do as a quarterback, and the numbers he puts up compared to those who are getting paid, you have to pay Tony Romo that. Like you have to pay him along the lines of what you're paying. You can point to the late game snafus, you can point to whatever, the interceptions and inopportune times and moments. Cool. But the bottom line is he's a very, very productive and very, very good quarterback. And for a starter who is essentially in the middle of his prime for that position, I mean, he's going to have another 5 years of productivity you got to pay. You have to.
It's funny because, like,
beast, and that's the market.
I don't even like talking about Tony Romo because, like, yo, every time I try to defend him, he does something stupid. But I understand the logic of paying him what you pay him because when you look at what else is out there, I mean, a quarterback position is such an important position in football. And when you look at what else is out there, who else are you going to put in that place? But my question is this, on the flip side, how important is DeMarcus Ware? Because it sounds like you're not trying to take care of him while you're taking care of Romo. You're making sure Romo gets paid. That's one thing.
It's a position where, first of all, I would find a way to pay DeMarcus Ware and protract it. I would lessen his salary, but I would guarantee more. So I would say, Mr. Ware, you know, you're making $10 million a season. Would you consider taking $7 million? But guess what? Where we initially had $20 million guaranteed. If you're willing to take $7 million a season, I'll guarantee you 21 or 25 so that you can lower those salary cap numbers.
No, I got what you're saying. So negotiate with him that way. And the thing about it is that may affect
that he plays.
That,
He's going to take more of a beating, and his body is going to break down faster than Tony Romo. So you have to pay attention to this within the sense and the context and perspective of him being an asset. Don't look at these guys as human beings. Look at them as, and what you do with an asset, it determines its value. And DeMarcus Ware playing on the D-line, being, you know, having contact every play, it's going to wear his body down quicker, so he has a shorter shelf life. So you have to, you can't, fans like to pay people based on nostalgia and based on accomplishment. And the business side of football pays for potential and what's going to happen going forward, what you can project. And if you project, DeMarcus Ware is damn near done. Now, he could
Here's the thing. Like, I mean, he wasn't hurt at all within his first, well, I think it was like 8 or 9 seasons. He never got hurt. Now, he did get nicked up a little bit in 2013, and his salary is actually $12.25 million for 2014 coming up, but it's also a $16 million salary cap hit. And he is the Cowboys' all-time leading pass rusher, by the way. He's all-time leading pass rusher, by the way.
Production
and
isn't there.
There's so many things that go into this. He's two seasons removed from having 19 and a half sacks. But at the same time, when you look at the Cowboys historically, they've made mistakes in terms of holding on to players too long and not letting them go, a la Emmitt Smith. But at the end of the day, this will be interesting what happens here because he definitely can contribute on the field. Whether that's with the Cowboys, we don't know. But I just try to juxtapose what's going on with Tony Romo and where, and I just find it interesting because like they take care of him, and I guess that's where they put their value at that position. But let's not negate what a pass rush means in today's league when it's a passing league.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. But if I'm looking at him being 31 years of age and already basically 10 years into his career, how much longer is he going to be a shoe-in for 12 sacks a season? You know what I'm saying? Like, how much longer can we say, because DeMarcus Ware used to be a guy where you could just say, look, he's going to get 12 sacks guaranteed, period. In 2013, Jimmy, he played 13 games. He had 13 starts. He had 6 sacks. That's less than, you know, a half a sack per game. So is that at 31, is that indicative of where it's going, or is that just an anomaly? Are you saying at 32 he's going to have a resurgence like Robert Mathis? You want to put your money on that? No. And then going beyond that to say at 33 he's going to do that. At 34, I can't. He's at the end of the road, so I don't want to pay him 12. I don't want to pay him $12 million. I don't want to take a $60 million cap hit.
Yeah, I respect that. I wonder what the market is for him, and we'll see what's going to happen with him. Just take the pay cut.
A one-year deal with a lot of incentives.
Yeah, I want to see what happens. I think he still can contribute, but we shall see. Now, I have a last question I'm going to ask you before we move on. This is in reference to a topic we talked about on our website, on our Facebook page, as well as the show last week, and people were going crazy. So I want to bring it back up to give you a chance to give your thoughts because you really didn't get a chance to express how you felt about this. When we talked about Stephen A. Smith, who made a comment about the excessive tattoos on NBA players and how you have a lot of kids who follow NBA players and are also getting excessive tattoos, including tattoos on their neck, on their hands, and how it affects them in the job market. And he kind of called the NBA players to question, basically saying you should be more of a role model. You know people are watching you, and they're following what you do. And I noticed to be a fact, because we had a discussion, like, off-air, and I was like, yo, people literally go out and get their favorite player's tattoo on the same spot, the same exact tattoo. I saw a dude in the playground with the Kobe tattoo, which is interesting because that might be the worst tattoo that I've ever seen in my life. I think Kobe let Vanessa do that. But at the end of the day, someone who's a Kobe fan, actually a sickle fan, went out and got that on their arm. I mean, I've seen dudes with all AI tattoos. What is your opinion overall when you see NBA play? I mean, because now it seems as though everybody has them. I mean, we'll talk about AI in a little while, but he kind of changed the game because before him you had Rodman, but that was kind of it.
Yeah.
Now everybody
has a sleeve.
No one
was following Rodman. No one cared. Like, Rodman was his own entity, and it was like, yeah, that's Dennis Rodman, but I'm not trying to be. Look, the bottom line with these guys is we find something within them that we think we can relate to. Although they live a millionaire's dream lifestyle, and you got to get, as LeBron said, you got to get up to your miserable life and go to work every day. You have to be cognizant of that. And the reality is, in traditional, I won't say traditional, I'll say mainstream society, you are limiting yourself by overdoing it with the tattoos. I'm not against tattoos. I'm not against long hair. I'm not against any of that. I've had locks to down my back. You know, we got guys on our staff and as a part of the executive ownership of War Room Sports that are tatted up. But at the end of the day, there's a level of moderation and balance that has to be practiced. And your artistic expression doesn't necessarily have to be shared with the world at all times. But if you have a tattoo on your neck, on your face, on your hands, it's impossible to hide it. You're forcing me to look at
you gotta
it.
Go in with
and
a,
now
with a, you got to go in
yeah,
all the time with
you,
your whole body covered up, yo.
Yeah, you become a representation. When I hire you for a job or a position, you now represent my brand. No matter how insignificant your role or position is with my company. Now, from a civil rights standpoint, from a constitutional rights standpoint, you have a right to do whatever you want to do that does not infringe upon another human being's rights. But understand that I have a right not to hire you. I have a right to put a policy in place where I say it's not acceptable for those that work for me. And so I don't think these people consider that. And the argument in response to me is, well, that's not fair. Well, when was life ever fair? Like,
here's what's interesting.
If you're following a sports personality whose job permits him to do that and live a certain lifestyle, you're deluding yourself.
Yo, here's the thing, right? You know what people say a lot of times as they get older, they become more conservative. But I think I've actually become more liberal the older I get because I just don't care enough about things. And this is coming from a guy who has long hair right now, tattoos. I got it all. But at the end of the day, I really believe in freedom, right? So a lot of times when we talk about even people being racist or saying certain things, like, yo, you have the freedom to say that. You can do whatever you want to do. Yo, you even have the freedom
War
to be racist.
Sports is
it's
about
funny because me and Joel, shout out to Joel. We're talking last week, and we were talking about, racist remarks in sports. It's always a story about racist remarks. And then Joel made the point, and I was like, yo, I agree. He says, people have a right to be racist. But at the end of the day, regardless of wherever you are, whether you have a right to be racist, you have a right to wear tattoos, wear the long hair, you have to take what comes with that. So as long as you're willing to deal with the consequences, you can do and say whatever you want, in my opinion. I just don't care. I don't care who you date.
Now,
I don't care who you love. I don't care what you tattoo, yo.
Now,
you're not bothering me.
I don't necessarily totally agree with that position, but I acknowledge that it's an enlightened position. How many of these people do you think have the foresight to understand the consequences and the repercussions that come from their action, which is, I'm going to get all of these tattoos?
That's the problem. That's the issue here with what we're talking about.
There
but
go.
Then there's another issue. It's another
there
issue in trying to come down
you
on
go.
Players. What responsibility do the players have in terms of watching what they, you know, do, say, wear?
None.
What kind of responsibility do
None.
They have?
None. It's an implicit moral obligation that's unenforceable. So you should feel within yourself compelled to do things, understanding that millions and millions of people watch you and millions of people are influenced by who you are and what you do because of the station and stature that you achieve in life.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't, no one can force you. Like the fact that companies and brands give these guys millions and millions of dollars to represent them is about their influence. It's about what sway they hold over society. But at the end of the day, there's no law that says you must be a role model for other human beings. Like, there's no law. So I don't think force these dudes to do it.
On a societal level, I think that society is moving kind of along the same lines I am, but because things are just being more accepted. I'm not saying it's right, but that's a fact. Do you remember when AI came in the league and he got a sponsorship? Matter of fact, it wasn't even a sponsorship. He was on the cover of a magazine, and they airbrushed his tattoos off.
Mm-hmm. I remember
it's
that.
It's like now that kind of stuff doesn't matter. LeBron is the most marketed athlete in the world. LeBron has tattoos all up and down his arm.
I don't disagree, but let me ask you this. And it's not necessarily a disagreement with what you're saying, but I have a question. Why is it that the NBA forces these guys to dress up and have sort of a corporate image if everything is permissible and acceptable?
Here's why. Here's why that happened. That happened because of their customer base. The NBA was at a point financially where it was getting so far away from the customer base. When you look at the history of the league and the players that played in the league, and how it's progressed. I mean, when the NBA became a majority black, and now people that actually go to basketball games and support basketball as much as we want to believe, they're middle-class white families and white guys. I mean, we think that basketball is a hip-hop sport, and in a sense it is. But when you go to the arena, that's not what you see. The people that spend the dollars that actually buy tickets, that's not what you see. So it was sort of like, you know, to take care of their customer base. But at the end of the day, these guys done took that too far with these tight clothes. But that's a whole nother issue that I don't even want to start talking about. But, I mean, that's why that happened under David Stern. And shout out to David Stern, you know, who's gone now. But his replacement is all about the dollar sign. So he's going to probably keep that up to continue to try to rake in the revenue. So I think society is moving forward. You even have companies now, right? I was reading a Fast Company article, and it was talking about law firms and how a lot of law firms now don't even have dress codes. And these are some of the top law firms in the world with some of the brightest minds. But cats are sitting in there with cargo shorts on at work. And it's like society is just changing. We're becoming, like, less formal. It's out of control right now. You know what I mean? So
if everything is permitted, then what was the purpose and intention of the structure to begin with?
Great question. Yo, shout out to Skyview, Kevin. I see you out there in our chat room. And shout out to Jen. You got to chill. I see you too. But, anyway, let's move on, though, because we want to talk about some basketball, because there's a lot of things to talk about in the world of hoops. Before we do, tell everybody how to get in touch with us real quick, good brother.
Absolutely. Check out our website at warroomsports.com. Call in and speak with us about any of the topics that we're discussing right now. Right now. Dial the Digital Extreme Technologies hotline at 323-410-0012, and we will answer the phones from our studios located in sunny Beverly Hills. That's where we're broadcasting from. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, press 1 if you want to talk. We'll be checking social media, seeing what's going on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Tumblr, Christian Mingle, Black Planet, MySpace.
Farmers Only.
We're looking. Farmers Only.
At me on Farmers Only. I'm at JW the Blueprint on Farmers Only, man. But anyway, man, we gotta talk some hoops. Yo, X. Anyway, listen, though, let's talk about the NBA. Let's talk about our sponsor, Fanatics. For the best in your favorite team's merchandise and apparel, shop Fanatics. Shopping Fanatics is easy. Go to our site, which is warroomsports.com. Click on the Fanatics logo on our main page, or you can go right to our sponsors page to see all of our sponsors and, you know, support all of them because they support us. But make sure when it comes to Fanatics, you get your favorite gear in NFL, NBA, NHL, MLB, NCAA, MMA, boxing, whatever it is. We have gear for everything right on the Fanatics tab of warroomsports.com. You ready to talk hoops, good brother?
Oh, I'm bored with it. Always.
You already know, man. And shout out to everybody in the chat room, those on Facebook and Twitter. You want to call in and talk some hoops with us. The number is 323-410-0012. First thing I want to talk about is the NBA Players of the Week. Now, B. Austin, the thing about the Players of the Week is one of these guys we've been defending since the beginning of the season, yet people continuously slander this guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, they continuously slander him, although he's having his best season.
Hold on, Jimmy. Hold on. Before we go into that, yo, you got to let our man Curtis Blow get pissed.
Shout out to Curtis Blow for the basketball song. Curtis Blow might be the most overrated MC. Never mind. I don't get into that for some old heads call up and cut me out. But if you go back and listen to Curtis Blow's catalog, yo, it's really not that great. Anyway, as I was saying, this guy, John Wall, right?
Curtis Blow's lyrics sound like he was battling Fat Elvis.
Yo, stop, King. All right, listen to John Wall, right? I know you've been defending John Wall. I've seen you online defending John Wall when people slander him. He's having one of his greatest seasons, you know, dunk championship. I hold the whole nine, but let me give you what happened to John Wall, who is the player of the week. John Wall, the player of the week, had a 3-0 week for his team. He averaged 25, 10.7 assists, 2 steals. He shot 59% from the field and 81% from the foul line. I mean, this guy is having a tremendous season, and because he plays on that team, he really isn't getting his props. But now he's won player of the week. John Wall is playing out of his mind, if you ask me. And as Dev likes to say, he's a difference maker on his team. And the comparisons between him and Kyrie Irving are, you know, will always be there. But we'll see what happens. Right now, I think I'd take John Wall, but I wouldn't be surprised, because Kyrie Irving is out of his mind, too. We've seen him shaking big people on a nightly basis, but John Wall just makes a difference on that team. Would you take John Wall right now or Kyrie Irving? Right now.
Right. Actually, right now, there's a couple point guards I'd take over Kyrie Irving. John Wall is definitely one of them. Kyle Lowry for this season is one of them. Gorgon Dragic is one of them.
Now, let me stop you. Are you saying you would take them for this season, or you would take them this season and moving forward?
This season. Moving forward, at you know, as far as projecting who will have a better career from this point forward, I'd say those two players. I would say John Wall one, Kyrie Irving two. Yeah, John Wall. I'm taking John Wall. Here's the thing with John Wall, right? And here's the difference, right? Kyrie Irving has a game that is highly skilled, and based on his individual basketball talent, I mean, he's a highly skilled dude, and he can score in a myriad of ways if it develops. But as a point guard, common knowledge of the game should tell you it's great that my point guard can score, but what does he do to control the tempo of the game? What does he do in terms of passing and setting other people up? What does he do in terms of court leadership? How does he think the game? The benefit of the doubt that I extend to Kyrie is he's 21. And so, you know us, War Room Sports is all about arguing for the love of the game and the science of the sport, the art of the sport. And so I don't want the things that I see in these dialogues, these arguments and these debates that we have, which is really disrespectful, not only to another player, but to the sport itself. When I hear people pick John Wall and poop on Kyrie, I have to say, hold on. First of all, he's having a great season, and he's 21 years old. He's a kid. So he's learned. He's picking it up. John Wall is another one. When you argue against John Wall and pick Kyrie, a lot of times people slam him because his game isn't as pretty. His game
isn't
as developed.
You know, that's par for the course, brother. Here's the thing, right? When it comes to debating athletes, comes to debating artists, you could talk about a singer, a painter, a rapper. You could talk about an author. People feel as though you have to slander one to big up the other one. And I found it funny yesterday. I didn't even, like, engage in the conversation, but looking at the debates between, like, Barry and Emmett, it's like, if you feel Barry is better, cool. But why would you just poop on Emmett the way you do it? And vice versa. People do this with everything. So
Emmett is an overrated piece of trash.
See, now you about to start with it. But all I'm saying is this. You don't have to poop on one. This happens all the time. There are certain debates that I will never get on, whether we're talking, because, you know, I live on Twitter. You know, I really don't visit the other site y'all on. But there's certain debates I'll never get in. Like, I'll never get into a Jay-Z Nas debate. I'll never get into a Kobe LeBron debate. Yo, I don't, because you can't, it's like, there's no point. They never end. I won't even get in the Tupac and Biggie debate. I won't get in the Tupac and Biggie debate because they go around and around. But now the Kyrie Irving and John Wall debate is another one of these debates where it's like people just slander him. But I get what you're saying. Both guys have talent. Well, both are young players. We'll see what's going to happen.
As Dev says, John Wall takes his talent and utilizes it to impact the game, impact a possession, impact a season for wins, for productivity of the team overall. And he understands that, and hence the reason he's averaging damn near 9 assists a game. Kyrie takes his talent and is able to impact the game and his own personal stat line because there's no one that can guard him, but it doesn't translate into winning production yet.
He'd be out there cooking cats, man.
Kyrie, listen, if you watch Kyrie, what he's doing, and y'all can quote me on this and use this hashtag, yo, he's throwing hot grease on that. Yo, he run by you and throw the fried chicken grease on you in a minute, and you burning and falling all down and looking all crazy. Yeah, he will cut you up.
Question,
John
question
Wall
for you.
Will step on the gas pedal, beat you down the court, and bang on you real nice.
Does Kyrie Irving have the best handle? Does he have the best handle in the NBA? Is Kyrie Irving the best ball handler in the league?
No.
Who has the best handle?
No. It's between Chris Paul and Jamal Crawford.
You think Chris Paul
Chris Paul, Jamal Crawford, and Kyrie. Those are my
come on,
my
man.
Chris Paul, right?
Chris Paul, yeah. Him and Cliff, right? The both of them. They get the assist. They can control the rock. But do you think his handle is like that nice? His handle is that nice?
You know what it is, Jimmy. And I'll concede this, so you can take this angle in your rebuttal, because I'm not sure. I do watch Chris Paul, and they let him get away with a lot of carry because he's so little and close to the ground. Cliff Paul carries the ball. But as long as they're allowing him to do it, the advantage is to him. The things that Cliff Paul does when he wants to show you up and get in his little dribble motion are amazing because they're allowing him to palm and carry. Kyrie's handle is a little bit more sharp, as in he does keep his hand on top of the ball, and that thing is yo-yoing. But, again, I come back to the fact they let Cliff Paul do it, so I have to take it into consideration. Now, your man Jamal Crawford, come on, man. You see what he did.
Yo. Let's talk about the Western Conference Player of the Week, though. We talk a lot about John Wall. Shout out to John Wall for the season he's having and also the winning Player of the Week.
Shout out to John Wall for playing defense.
Absolutely. It's your man Harden. Harden led the Rockets to a 2-on-1 week. He averaged 27 and 7.7 assists, as well as 2 steals.
Mm-hmm.
So he averaged 27 and 8. And his team went 2-on-1.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what do you think about your man Harden, Beard Gang?
First of all, James Harden is probably my second favorite or third favorite player to watch in the NBA behind one half of the DeBarge brothers and Jamal Crawford. Behind those two, James Harden is next. Yo,
Before you move on, I just want to put this on the record for those that listen on the podcast, for those listening live. What you're telling me is your two favorite players in the entire National Basketball Association to watch is Jamal Crawford and Stephen Curry.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the entire league, so this includes Durant, LeBron, whoever.
Yes.
You're saying that your two favorite players are Steph Curry and Jamal Crawford.
Yes. And Durant is on that list. I do enjoy watching Kevin Durant. He's probably number four on that list. Number three is James Harden.
All right, I respect that though, because like if I give you my favorite players to watch, you're gonna say why. So I get it, because it's not always about LeBron doing.
Luis Scola. Jimmy Williams likes to watch Luis Scola and Greg Monroe.
Yo, Zach Randolph. But, yo, Luis Scola, yo, I'm telling you, Luis Scola.
Yo, I love
so,
Zach Randolph, yo, number six.
Andre Miller, too, man, because I don't know how Andre Miller. Yo, do you realize, first off, why does Andre Miller seem so old? When I was watching AI's retirement ceremony, I didn't realize that Andre Miller is younger than AI. Why does he seem older than AI?
He is older
than
AI.
Yo, he's not, though. He's not.
Nah, I know he's not.
He seems that way, though. But, yo, Andre Miller is one of my favorite players to watch because Andre Miller can't jump. He can't shoot that well, but yet he gets numbers, and people still fall for the pump fake. Why are you falling for the pump fake 20 years later? What is he faking?
You fall for the pump fake of a guy that really can't shoot. Yo, Andre Miller became one of my favorite players to watch when he dropped 50 and they interviewed him and he kept a straight face and chewed gum like Mr. Ed in the interview and just said, yeah, that's what I do.
Yeah,
like
man,
he dropped
no
50
doubt.
On a regular basis.
Yo, he dropped 50.
That's my homie.
He dropped 50 without being able to shoot, without having any athletic ability. He still put up 50.
How does he even score? Because he can't jump, he can't finish over the top, and he can't shoot.
But that's why he's the best player to watch, man. In the words of Cameron Giles, man, he's basically got a basic game, yet he does what he does, man. But back to James Harden being your third favorite player in the league to watch behind the DeBarge brother and Jamal Crawford. He's your third favorite player to watch. That's a weird three. Yes. But nonetheless, 27 and 8. Is what his average was, and he won Player of the Week. What do you think the Rockets can do long-term? Do you think they can make any noise in the Western Conference?
Yes. Yes, because the Spurs, as well coached as they are, Father Time, I mean, Father Time, they're turning Father Time into Usain Bolt, and they're Justin Gatton.
Got you.
So Father Time is going to beat them. OKC is the real deal. Can they beat OKC? Probably not. Probably not.
Got you.
Portland, I love Portland. I respect seeing what they're doing, but the Rockets can beat them. I love what's going on in Golden State. The Rockets can definitely beat Golden State.
You can't win a championship with two light-skinned point guards,
yeah.
or two light-skinned guards, for that matter, forget point guards.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
Yo,
it's never been done
tough.
In the history of basketball.
They're tough. They're tough for light-skinned brothers, and Klay Thompson actually plays deep. Like, he D's up. He D's up like a dark-skinned brother, but no. They
that
depend
ain't gonna
on
happen,
the jumper, man. They depend on the jumper too much. It's like, you know, suburban dudes depend on the jumper, and urban cats go to the rack. But that's a whole other conversation. I think the Rockets beat them, and so I see them ascending in the seeding, and I see them ascending in the overall landscape of the Western Conference. I don't know where to rank them yet. I know OKC is better. I think the Mavericks are still better, just because even though Dirk is falling off a little, his fall is graceful. His fall is kind of like a Kobe fall. Like, he's not what he was, but he still busts your ass.
All right,
and
but here's my thing, right? When you look at the Western Conference for this year and also moving forward, what's kind of scary is OKC because they're, for all intents and purposes, they are a young team. And, like, how do the Rockets get over that hump where they can compete at that level with the OKC? Like, what moves can they make? They added the big fella, you know.
Yeah.
And by the way, shout-out to Dennis Johnson.
Know.
In our chat
you
room, Scott Kevin said we got to give Dennis Johnson a shout-out because he was a light-skinned guard. He had freckles, and I would argue whether
like
he was light-skinned or not. You know what I'm saying? Plus, he was only one light-skinned brother in the backcourt. I said, you can't have two. You can't have two guards at the same time. Now, you could argue that he had Danny Ainge, but he's a white boy, but he's a hell of a shooter. But this is a whole other debate. My question is this. How do the Rockets improve to get to that point? Like, what can they add on that team that they currently have to get them to the level where they can compete with OKC?
Chandler Parsons is underrated. And they've got a four. They've got a power forward, and I forget his name. He's developing. The problem with OKC is you're right. Yo, do you realize OKC is so young that they respond to injuries like young bulls. You remember when you used to get hurt, and you were hurt, and it was painful, but like within 2 weeks or a week, you wasn't injured. Like no matter what it was, you just weren't injured anymore. That's how Westbrook is. Like, Westbrook is, like, he gets injured, but within a month, like, he's not injured anymore. Like, just because he's young. Like, that's how young they are. So I think as Serge Ibaka, who has a hellacious and unheard-of work ethic, as he develops and gets better, if he can find a way
to not,
he's developing into a light-skinned big man. Like, he got to find a way to go see his brother from another country, the spiritual leader, Hakeem Olajuwon, and get some moves. Like that's what I would say to Serge. Look, man, develop three moves and three counters, a counter for each move.
But listen,
they're set,
though. I'm not even asking you about them. They are set. I want to know what can the Rockets do to get to that next level. OKC has done a hell of a job. You never know
when Dwight is going to go through a period where he's on his period and, like, how that's going to affect his ability to play. Like, right now, he doesn't need to drink any cranberry juice, so he's balling. Like, the iron in his bloodstream is there. But Jake, yo, I'll tell you what they can do. A personal thing, and it's not a personnel addition. As much as I love James Harden, brother, that's my man. Yo, James Harden, play some goddamn defense, man. His defense is it's Vince-like, it's Rudy Gay-like, it's Carmelo. Yo, his defense is terrible.
All right, right, here we go. I'm Skyview Kevin. Shout out to Skyview Kevin. Although you're a Raiders fan, I still want to give you a shout out. He says they need someone that can be like a defensive player and a rebounder, someone like a Horace Grant. No, to add him next to Dwight. What do you think about that?
Well, that's the dude. That's the power forward, and somebody find his name for me. The power forward that they have right now, he's little known, but he's highly talented, and he's beside Dwight. He's that defensive guy because he can guard the three and the four. He's athletic. He's that guy.
So you
guy.
Think they already have? You think they already have all the pieces they need? I mean, think
Chandler,
about this, man.
Chandler
think
Parsons,
about this.
Chandler Parsons is also underrated overall, offensively and defensively. He D's up. He D's up. I don't know. There's something missing, and it may be my bias towards Dwight Howard hate that's causing me to feel that way, but there is something missing. I want to say it's a bench. Where did they get their scoring? On the bench. Jeremy Lin is one dude, but if you get real rough and aggressive with him, he's suburban, you know, so he'll wilt in the playoffs. Francisco Garcia, can you really win with a guy named Francisco? Like,
listen,
I don't
man,
know.
Everybody needs a tough poppy on their team, man.
But he's
don't
not
hate
tough,
him.
Though.
This is true.
He's
this
not
is
tough.
True. He's suburban. In your words, he's suburban. Yeah.
And then
Patrick
Beverly just makes people angry. Like, he plays too much D. He's like, yo, chill out, dog. Like, come on.
Patrick Beverly and Mays, he never stops, yo. He goes too hard, man. That's how people get hurt playing against Patrick Beverly and Mays.
Think about it, Jimmy. Like, there are great defenders in the league that people don't think are corny for the way they go about it. Like, no one thinks dark-skinned Jermaine is corny for being a hard-nosed defender because he's not going to be all up on you and fouling and hacking you when you're 30 feet away from the basket. You know, he does what he needs to do when he needs to do it. Patrick Beverly is drawn. Like, he's drawn. Like, he's a little corny with it.
Yeah, Frankie Beverly and Mays be out there causing joy and pain. Yo, I'm nice. Anyway, let's move on. You see what I did right there? Let's move on to the NBA Players of the Month because the Players of the Month were named. Your guy, the guy who has caught a lot of slander, but he seems to be turning it around. We're talking about a gentleman who is considered so soft that many people assume that as he was, getting ready for the game, this was his warm-up music right here, good brother. So you already know who I'm talking about. That's Blake Griffin. Now, let me tell you, now, before you even get started on Blake Griffin, let me tell you. The Clippers went 7-4 during the course of the month. But they also have victories over Houston, OKC, as well as Portland, which are three of the best teams in the world. This guy was averaging 30-11. 30-11 during the course of the month, and they had those three victories, but also won 7-4 during the course of the month. So that's your player of the month in the Western Conference, Blake Griffin. Now, he's kind of turned it around. He's getting better. What do you have to say about Blake Griffin?
I criticize Blake for having all of that talent and not really doing much with it other than dunking. And so now I have to acknowledge the fact that he is really putting forth effort to become a complete basketball player. I've seen the changes. I've watched a lot of Clippers games because I like to see when Jamal Crawford goes into his act and throw that hot water on people. So I've had an occasion to watch Blake and DeAndre. That front court is taking the steps. Like, they're maturing. I don't think they're there yet where they would beat OKC, but Blake is a different player than he was two seasons ago. He's a different player. He's balling. He's balling, and he's making a concentrated effort both on defense and his rebounding. The scoring. I mean, he's definitely improved there as well. That mid-range is getting better. He's getting post-up moves. He's developing moves and not just bam, bam, oh, I can, you know, jump over you and step on your chest. Like, he's developing moves. But his defensive intensity and his rebounding, because you remember there was a time when he was putting up 22, 23 a game for, like, seven rebounds.
One thing I find amazing about his game, watching him play, when you break down the film of the Clippers game, I mean, he does what he does, but his cardio is crazy. Like, dude plays at a high level all game long. Like, who does that?
Yeah, he's drunk.
I mean,
because
when you watch other players play, by the third quarter, sometimes by the second quarter, they're done. Like, yo, they need a break. This dude goes hard, like, all game long.
Yeah, his
so
conditioning, he trains at Coronado. And for those of you who don't know what Coronado is, you have Google, look it up. There are those guys in black masks with a lot of weaponry that work for the Navy. That's where they train.
Yeah.
And he trains, allegedly he trains with them.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
And
because
so
I tell you one
lot,
thing, in the fourth
done
quarter,
a lot for his conditioning.
In the fourth quarter, cats be tired, and he still is going hard, and I find that amazing. But 30-11 over the course of a month, and those are three big wins, yo. Houston, OKC, and Portland, those are three of the best teams in the world. So shout out to him for winning Player of the Month. Now, the Player of the Month in the Eastern Conference is your guy, LeBron Raymond James. And the Heat are on fire, no pun intended, and helping guide the Heat to a 9-1 record. Listen to LeBron's averages. 31 points, 8.1 rebounds, and 7 assists. Now, this is after he missed a game because he broke his nose. But he also shot 58% from the field. He became only the second player to average at least 30 points a game, 8 rebounds, and 6 assists while shooting 57% for a whole month. Do you know what that other player was?
Who?
Take a guess.
MGZ?
Nope.
Kevin.
Listen, 30 points, 8 rebounds, and 6 assists while shooting 57%
Oscar.
For an entire
Oscar.
Month.
Oscar.
Not at all.
Big O.
Not at all.
Oh,
Wilt
man.
Chamberlain. He's
oh,
the only.
Oh,
so,
daddy. No human being can do that.
Absolutely. Shout out to Sonny Hill. But here's the thing. Wilt Chamberlain is the only other player. So when you start putting up numbers that can be compared to Wilt, this is how great you're playing right now. And what's funny about this is everybody was giving the MVP to Durant, but LeBron right now is playing out of his mind. We'll talk about that in a little bit later
Wait,
in terms
hold,
of where
hold
the
on,
MVP
hold on,
rate
hold on,
is.
Hold on, Jimmy, you brought up Wilt. There's another statistic that I have to ask about then, and if he's not hitting that statistic, then none of this basketball stuff matters. How
yo.
Many blonde hair, blue-eyed Hugh Hefner lovers is he scraping?
Yo,
and if
we
he's
won't
not
know
until
he retires.
Then,
yo, man, anyway,
well.
Listen, though. When you're putting up numbers, right, and you see Wilt's name next to it, it's hilarious.
Yeah,
but you know that you know you're playing at a high level when you do that. I mean, 57% from the field. And this is something that people never look at. People never look at field goal percentage. But when you're able to average 30 points and you're shooting 57%, he actually was 57.5. He's about 58%. That's crazy.
Mm.
There are guys that could put up 30
I mean,
and they're shooting 29%, 22%. This means
that
he's
means,
efficient.
That means that he's doing it on about 20, probably 22 shots, 20,
yo,
24 shots.
He's already the most efficient player in the NBA. His efficiency rating is through the roof, but, like, come on, man. 57%, 38-6. LeBron right now is putting up historical numbers. But here's the thing. LeBron also went for 61. And here's what I found funny about this. Dominique Wilkins. We all know the legend Dominique Wilkins, who he is. I used to lie and tell girls Dominique was my uncle when I was trying to come up as a young boy. But that's either here nor there. Dominique said he wasn't impressed. He said that he could have put up 40 against the Bobcats. My question is he hating? And the reason I ask that is because there were also fans on our page as well as everywhere else that were saying it wasn't that, you know, it wasn't, he didn't really do nothing. I haven't heard actual Heat fans say that. It was just the Bobcats. But then you have people that, like, love LeBron so much that, you know, they want to gargle his children, and they said it's the greatest performance ever. It's even greater than the 81 that Kobe put up. So my question to you is this. Was Dominique hating for one, and how impressive was 61 on the Bobcats?
I don't believe that Dominique was hating. I saw the comments. They were on Twitter. He tweeted them. He probably could have said things a little differently. But here's the reason that I say he wasn't hating. When he made the comments, they were directed more at the Bobcats than they were at LeBron. And if it were me saying those comments, I could understand why people would think it was hate because, you know, we do the subliminal thing. I think that I'm not going to give Dominique the credit of that level of slander ability. I think he was just pointing out the fact that he saw defensive breakdowns on the Bobcats that would allow a great scorer and a great player like LeBron to take advantage of it. I think that it wasn't – they weren't playing hard-nosed defense. And here's the thing. Here's the thing. When you score 61 points, when you score 50, when you score 41 points, there's no denying that. If you score 41 on Boy Scouts, if you score 61 on dead people, if you score 61 on your shadow, it's 61 points. So, I mean, this is our job to analyze those type of performances, but I can also understand where if I'm looking at the average fan and they're trying to discredit it, and they're trying to knock it, then I would have to say it's 61 points. It's 61 points. Like that, those things only happen once every two seasons, once every season, once every three seasons. Like you have to celebrate it for what it is. Now, when I read Dominique's comments, he was talking about specific breakdowns with the Bobcats defense. And I'm
here's
sure
the thing, though. Here's the thing. Here's a couple of things. First of all, shout out to Dev because Dev just chimed in. And for those who don't notice, Dev is not on the show tonight. Dev is actually handling company business in Chicago, and Doc Bayon is handling company business on the West Coast because we are doing things on a national and global level. So shout out to my witty and talented good brothers. But Dev says the Bobcats have the 7th-ranked defense in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's mm-hmm. even though Bron and Melo both went for 60, but their defense is actually ranked amongst the top defenses in the NBA. So people have to understand that as well. But here's the thing: you say that you wouldn't give him credit for being subliminal. Yo, I think he was being double sub. I think Dominique was dissing Jordan. Yo, I think Dominique is still mad that Mike robbed him of a dunk contest.
I agree. I definitely agree with that, and I could see where you would go that way. Now to address Brother Dev, and I'm sure he'll come on and dismantle and have a rebuttal, but I would say you definitely can say, listen, they're the number 7 ranked defense, and they play good defense.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with the Bobcats is they depend on Al Jefferson and Kemba Walker for all their offense and nothing else. So what happens with a team like the Bobcats when they're faced with actual decent, not just good, not great.
Mm-hmm.
The Miami Heat are a great offense. When they're playing decent offenses, it comes a point in the second half of a basketball game where you play good defense, you've given all of this effort, you're tired, and you're not producing the points that you need to keep up with a good offense. So that good offense is going to overtake the fact that you're playing great defense for 2.5 quarters or 3 quarters or even 3.5 quarters, and that's what happens with a team like the Bobcats. When they're playing a team like Miami, the offense feeds into the defense. Like, they may play great defense against the Heat for an extended period of time, but they can't keep up with the scoring. So you're giving mm-hmm. maximum offense on the offensive side of the ball, but you're just not good. And you're playing maximum effort on the defensive side of the ball because you're playing the world champs. You're tired. Yo, by the second half of that game, I don't care if they were the number 2 ranked defense. They didn't have the horses to keep up with the
Heat. Dev said he has no rebuttal. He said he has no rebuttal other than the fact that they just can't guard small forwards because those are the two positions that both Melo and Brown play who put up those numbers, yo. And while you out there in Chicago, man, make sure on your way back to the East Coast you bring some Garrett's, good brother, and we want the Chicago mix. It got to be the Chicago mix.
Who is the Bobcat small forward?
The Bobcat small forward. Yo,
small forward.
Jimmy Dolan from the air up there. Yo, did you say Orlando Woolridge, cuz?
No.
I mean, for Orlando, because Orlando Woolridge Orlando Woolridge may have played for about 40 teams, even though there's not 40 teams in the NBA. I think he got traded so many times that he went to a couple teams twice when they moved cities, like. And Orlando Woolridge had game.
Orlando Woolridge played for Mexican teams, Canadian teams. He played in the DR. Yo, he played everywhere. But who is their small forward? Who's the guy that caught most of the 123 points that was put up on?
That's a good question, man. That's a good question. Because their team, like Dev said, it's funny because you look at the Bobcats. First of all, I don't think that the Bobcats should be in the NBA. You know what I'm saying? I just don't think they should be in the NBA, but that's a whole other story.
Al Jefferson is an all-star, cuz. Come on, man.
Yo, but did you see the numbers he put up? The same game that Bron put up 61, that, you know, he put up his numbers, too. He got his numbers, but it's got overshadowed. But listen, though.
Yo,
here's the
Al
thing about
Jefferson
LeBron and his 61 and how LeBron is playing. It leads me to this conversation here. And that's the MVP race in the NBA. LeBron and Kevin Durant are basically going head-to-head without even playing each other. Pause, no Jason Collins. But who has the upper hand in winning this MVP? Because it seems like
Kevin
they're
Durant.
Trying to one-up each other every night. And everybody thought that Kevin Durant had ran away with it already and it was over. But do you think that Kevin Durant still has the upper hand, or is LeBron right there with him?
Mm-hmm. Kevin Durant.
What do you
mean, LeBron is definitely still in the conversation, and he's made a strong push. But one thing that I'm not, and I'd like to say that we are not, is prisoners of the moment. So you're not going to have a huge game, and that's going to swing the pendulum unless you guys were already tied, which they weren't tied. Kevin Durant had a sizable lead. LeBron has closed the gap with his February. And now we're sitting in March. He had a huge game. I would say today, if I had to pick it, it still would be Kevin Durant.
Okay. That's interesting because some people thought even when Durant was going off, like, it's not like LeBron was having a terrible year. It's going to be tough. I think personally that Durant will win. I think a lot of times they get tired of giving the same guy MVP.
Yeah,
which
they're
is
tired
why Carl,
of giving
which is
Larry
why,
has for
it. Yeah. Yeah, it's like, which is why Karl Malone won MVP when Jordan probably should have won one. They gave it to Karl Malone why Kobe only has one, because they don't want to give it to certain guys. And LeBron already has four. So it's just interesting, man, because if they keep playing this way, because not only is LeBron playing out of his mind, his team went 9-1, like, and there's still time left in this season. So what happens if he continues to play this way, you know?
He closes the gap. If you're voting on the MVP at the end of the regular season, LeBron has time to catch up and pass KD. But my thing is, here's my thing. How valuable is scoring? How valuable is scoring in the MVP race?
Yeah. I mean,
how valuable
it depends. It depends. I mean, it's valuable, but it's the most valuable?
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm asking. I'm asking you. I'm asking because I have a reason for that question. If scoring is the most valuable thing in determining a most valuable player, LeBron is a hell of a scorer. He's a hell of a scorer. But he's not the scorer that Kevin Durant. The thing that makes him better than Kevin Durant isn't scoring.
I agree, but what I'm saying is, when you say that, where are you factoring in assists? Because assists obviously lead to points. And it leads to the percentage
assists,
of your points offense. Now, a couple comments from our chat room. Skyview says that politics will keep LeBron from winning another one right now. And also the four letters will not be able to get ratings on Friday night if they can only market one superstar. So, you know, it's a lot of politics in play right now, trying to build that race up too by saying, hey, we have an MVP race going on. But I think it's legitimate because either guy could win. Put it like this. It's a situation with me that if LeBron did win, it wouldn't shock me, and if Durant won, it wouldn't shock me, nor would I be mad at either one. But I think that Durant will win because they kind of like want to make this into a rivalry that they can market and play on. They are tired of giving LeBron the MVP. But at the end of the day, if he keeps playing like this, and a lot of times it's not about how you start, but it's about how you finish, and this is the last mark that people see is LeBron running through the league, I could see him winning it. I could definitely see him winning it. Now, Kevin Durant's
They're trying to create the rivalry because they realize that Kobe-LeBron rivalry just won't work.
It won't work.
Kevin Durant is a better rival.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. I agree. But in order for it to be a rivalry, don't they have to like kind of like meet in the finals,
or
so if you can't guarantee that, let's just say, hey, we got the MVPs going against each other. So, you know, because Kevin Durant came right back, put up his own numbers. You know what I'm saying? Like, he had a 40-point game right after that. You know, and it was just like he had his 10th 40-point game.
The way their teams are constructed, I believe that there are nights when LeBron can get 40 or get 50, and there are nights where he would have to force it to get it. Basically, Kevin Durant can get 40 when he decides to. I mean, there's nothing inhibiting him from getting 40 other than whether or not his shot is on, because
it's
there's no one in
that.
His way to take shots.
It's funny you say that because the Miami, I was watching Spoelstra talk after the game, and he kind of said the same thing about LeBron. He said, this just shows you that LeBron wanted to. He said LeBron could easily win a scoring title any year. He felt like it. And, you know, but the fact of the matter is he doesn't.
I agree with that.
And it's funny, from coming from reading the Wilt Chamberlain book and him talking about just that. Is that he admitted to at times getting bored because he could do whatever he wanted to do, which is why you start focusing on other things. I'm going to see if I can lead the league in assists. Like, Wilt was literally so good that he would just try stuff. I'm going to try to see if I can lead the league in assists. And he did it playing center. but it's kind of like you have to figure out what's going to make your team be more successful, because LeBron probably could average 35, 40. But is that going to make his team a championship team? You know what I'm saying?
True.
And that's another thing. That's another analogy. Also, another analogy going back to the Wilt book, because it's fresh in my mind, when he says how people always talk about, like, Bill Russell, right, and how Bill Russell won the championships, and they say Wilt was selfish because he scored so much and that's all he cared about. And the point he was making is, on the teams that he played on, he had to score. If he didn't average 50, they wouldn't be in games, meaning that Durant is put in a position where he has to kind of be that scorer. Because I don't think that he can't do what LeBron does. You know, people always say, well, LeBron is better because he can do it. I think Kevin Durant could probably be just as good as facilitator, but that's not his role on that team.
Yo, if you take LeBron's scoring average, right, and dropped it down 10 points, I don't say 10, but 8 points, the Heat would still be a competitive team, and they have players capable of shouldering that load. If you take Durant and drop his scoring average down 8 to 10 points, Westbrook could pick up the slack. He could. How efficiently would he pick up the slack? We don't know. There's no one else on that team that could pick up those other 8 points. So they need Durant. That's his thing. That's what I mean when I say Kevin Durant is only limited by Kevin Durant. Not to say that LeBron couldn't go out and average 40 if he wanted to, but based on the decision, but they need Kevin Durant shooting. They need Kevin Durant scoring. They need.
Got you.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I was saying, too, you know. And I just thought, because I think about it, it's funny because I love reading, like, books on the history of the game, and it's funny how some things never change. So when I read that, that's the first thing I thought of is what's going on now. And speaking of older players hating, right? I told you I'm reading the Lakers book now called Showtime, but I'm also reading a book called The Big O, the Oscar Robertson book. Yo, Oscar Robertson, he comes off like, you said Dominique wasn't hating? Yo, Oscar Robertson comes off like a grumpy old man. Everybody in his day is better than everybody now. Let's put it that way. That's a whole sidebar. But anyway, I think that it's interesting.
So is the book
Showtime
basically talking about how Kareem is underrated and Magic is overrated, or
It goes in depth throughout the entire run. It starts in 79 when Magic is drafted, and it ends with it goes throughout the whole run, all the championship series, the wins, the losses, the Celtics rivalry, the Sixers rivalry, and it kind of ends with Magic's retirement. So it goes through that
I know they hated Pat Riley towards the end.
And with that being said, you can actually get that for free by going to audibletrial.com/warroomsports, but that's either here nor there.
Right.
But when you read that book and you talk, when you listen to some of the things, if you listen to Audible or you read it, whatever you do, and you listen to Magic talk about basketball, it'll kind of remind you of LeBron. What I'm saying is some things just never change in basketball, and this is why I kind of get upset when we talk any sports and people disrespect the players. Like those posts we put up yesterday, people were just out of control with the Jim Brown versus Walter Payton and the Emmitt versus Barry. Like, some of the disrespect they showed the older players are just, they didn't play against nobody. They played against midgets. But some of the things just aren't factually accurate. That bothers me to no end. So what I'm thinking about is this. Like, we see LeBron and Durant now going for this MVP this year and how they're playing. I wonder how historically this will be looked at. Because we diss the league right now, jokingly. But the fact of the matter is, like you always say, putting up 40 on your shadow is difficult. These guys are putting up numbers.
Yo,
whether you like,
yo,
just like the competition,
their numbers,
they're still professionals.
Yo, their numbers transcend era, transcend. That's kind of what I mean when I talk to folks about, like, don't allow your emotions to permit you to disrespect the game. Like, in essence, yo, when you see a 61-point performance, just accept it and enjoy it for what it is, whether you like the player or not. You know, like if I'm at the Summer League, you know, if I'm at the Summer League and I'm watching a pro-am and a player comes in and drops, I know nobody's really playing defense. It don't matter. That dude just scored 50. You know, a certain thing, if you score 50, you score 60, it don't matter where it is. It could be a pickup game. It could be the
Dog,
NBA.
If you score 50 or 60 on 2K10
yo,
or 2K14
yo,
or 2K11, it's hard to do it on a video game, man.
You accomplish something.
Yeah, so I agree.
Man,
I agree, but I just find it interesting how they do that. Like when they look at the Wilt numbers. Like I when LeBron scored his 61, they showed a statistic. It was something like there have been 40 times that someone has scored like 60 or more, and 22 of them were by Wilt. Yo, so everybody else shared like 18 amongst the history, and this is the history of the game. But it's funny though because people
yo,
like
your
discredit
man Wilt,
that.
I mean, I don't believe Wilt existed. That's still my position. I think that Sonny Hill made Wilt up.
But I'm just saying in general, B. Austin, like the only player who I don't see get slandered on and this is from the beginning, and this is any sport. No one ever talked dirty about Mike, and I don't even think that's Mike's fault because you don't really hear Mike out there still singing his own praises like you do some of these other athletes. Because some guys do get bitter. Like you watch Shaq.
Yo.
Shaq is completely bitter. But the thing is,
yeah,
Mike
better.
Has a machine behind him that helped him make
yo,
$90 million last year, which is Nike.
You know why,
so he's never
why Mike? You know why Mike? You know why Mike's not you know out there talking crazy? Because Mike is busy working out, trying to decide whether he wants to come back and average 12.
That's a good point.
So,
that's a good point. But you know, when I watch Shaq talk, Shaq comes off as being bitter, and he just stopped playing a couple years ago. He's already in his mad bag. Like,
yo,
he's already slandering people.
No, Shaq didn't stop. Shaq stopped playing 5 years ago. Shaquille Rashawn O'Neal stopped playing 2 seasons ago. But Shaq,
this is true. He still was collecting checks. This is true.
My man Shaq was airballing layups in Boston, man. Come on, cuz.
This is true. Couple quick stories before I get to the story I want to end off on. A couple quick stories in basketball. The Nets signed Jason Collins to another 10-day contract. So, why did they do this, B. Austin? What's your opinion on that?
To continue the merchandising push. I mean, the jersey is top three in sales globally. Then that was worked out. It was a deal that was done between Adam Silver, the league front office, Jason Collins' representation, and Mikhail Prokhorov. I think that Adam Silver and Prokhorov identified an opportunity for Prokhorov to recoup some of the money that he just went ahead and impetuously spent and willy-nilly blew on that current squad. You realize that the Nets have lost, even if they were good and they went to the chip, they lost. Like, based on the way he spent money, yo, they lost. So Adam Silver, this is exactly how it happened. War Room Sports Speculation. Adam Silver looked at the situation. He called Jason Collins' agent. He said, Jason Collins' agent, we have an opportunity for you. We'd like you to hear me out. We're going to get your guy signed. It's a big move. There's a certain segment of the population that we're trying to capture as a new demographic. We're expanding market share. These folks are dual-income households. Very rarely are their children unless they're adopted. They spend money big. They're into being healthy, fitness. Basketball is a game for them. What do you say? Cool. Then Adam Silver picked up the phone. He said, with Mikhail Prokhorov. This is Mikhail Prokhorov. What is it thing that you are wanting to talk about? Money. Money, Mikhail. You spent a lot of it. You need to recoup some. You blew it
the luxury tax we're charging you is a dollar for a dollar over. You're hemorrhaging dollars. Here, we've got a way for you to stay. We want you to continue as an owner. You're good for the league. You're not scared to invest in your asset. Here, we have an asset for you that you can utilize to recoup some of this money. We're going to give you a heightened split for the merchandising. What
so basically, this thing went down at the top, yo. Mm-hmm. So this is a big conspiracy,
yeah,
right?
And they're making it look, listen, Jimmy, they're making it look like it's legit by just announcing that it's a second 10-day. Dog, he signed through the rest of the season. He's on the squad for next year, for next season, because the merchandising, the sales from the merchandising, he will probably recoup the losses against the luxury tax just off of jersey sales and merchandising and advertising and sponsorship revenue from having that particular gentleman on his roster.
Yo,
so,
I got a quick question for you.
It was a move.
Because I was thinking about that, too, and it's also a perfect move with the Nets being in Brooklyn, New York, you know, the big market. You know, it's a good move. Adam Silver is that Adam Silver's about that bread, man. Yo, he's about that bread. Yo, here's my question to you, right? And this is a side note on this entire story, but I was thinking about this the other day. I was playing a game where I was like, what player represents what franchise? Meaning that what player is synonymous with what franchise, right? So if we say the 49ers, we say like Joe Montana. If you say like Boston, you may say Larry Bird, or you may say Bill Russell, or whatever. When you think about the Nets, what player is synonymous with the Nets in your opinion?
It's
two guys that come to mind, but Drazen. Who's your guy?
Drazen.
You really would say Drazen. That? See, I was thinking more Jason Kidd would be more synonymous with the Nets to me. But then I thought about it deeper. I was like, here's the crazy part. I said, yo, Dr. J might be like, because when you look at who's retired, whose jersey is retired, I think it's I think they did Jason's already as well. I think it's like Dr. J, Jason Kidd, and like Drazen, I think, are those three. But I was sitting there thinking about it. I was like, yo, Dr. J might be the face of two franchises. Who else can say
How long did Bernard play there?
Not long at all. He's more synonymous with being a New York Knickerbocker. But I was like, this guy is literally
For the point you're trying to make, I absolutely do not believe the person that I associate with the Net is who the general public associates with it.
Gotcha. It's funny. In our chat room.
People don't think of Drazen.
Yeah, in our chat room, Skyview actually said it right before you did. He said Petrovic and Derek Coleman for him. And I guess it depends upon what era you come up in, because I would also think Kenny Anderson. But I just thought that was interesting because I was sitting there thinking about it like, damn, Doc got his number retired two places. He might be because he, you know, think about it. Nets come from the ABA where he was that guy.
So now
he was like a three-time MVP.
Where Jimmy is going, because I need to hurry him up, is the Nets may have a new face to their franchise and be able to adopt the Nuggets old uniform and move that to Brooklyn.
Yo! With that being said, one thing I want to get to. The last topic we're going to talk about. Before I get to that topic, though, I want to just mention to you, be off, that J.R. Smith's brother, who J.R. Smith got a nice check this year. This is what you call, good family looking out. He was released from the Knicks team. Not the regular New York Knicks, but the Knicks G League team. So that whole fiasco seems to be over with. But the Knicks, they wanted to keep him so bad they gave his brother a job. And for that, New York Knickerbockers. Now, with that being said,
I just want to touch on something because we are basketball heads here, and I realize that there's probably very few people that I can ask this, but I know I can ask you. Like, this whole thing is so bad that I'm going to take it here. Who's worse, Chris Smith or Zach Mulberry?
Yo, I got to put some thought into that. Maybe Chris Smith, man, probably because it's just so recent.
I think Zach Mulberry was a better basketball player than Chris Smith, and Zach Mulberry couldn't get in the league, but Chris Smith got a job, and for that
called leverage,
man, double Joja. Yeah, but that's crazy because Chris Smith, if you watch him, please, he's not an NBA basketball player.
Here's my thing, though. What not really pissed me off, I thought the whole thing was funny. Nepotism is alive and well. What I found interesting was if J.R. Smith can do this, what are guys like Durant and LeBron going to be able to command? Like, they're going to have cousins and, like, you know, they're going to have chicks, brothers that they just smashing on the side, get jobs. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what kind of door does this open? This opens up a Pandora's box that shouldn't
straight up and down. If Durant is that type of dude, which I don't think he is, Durant's brother is 6'8 and about 280 and plays on the block. That's all I'm gonna say. I'm not saying
with that being
else.
Said, man, I just briefly talked about Dr. J possibly being a player that's synonymous with two franchises and could be the face of two franchises. One being the Nets and the other one being the Philadelphia 76ers, the hometown Sixers. Speaking of the Sixers, they just added another jersey into the rafters. This is B. Austin's probably his 1B or maybe his second favorite player to ever play basketball. I don't know how he would rank him, either 1B or 2. But Bubba Chuck, Allen Iverson, has now had his jersey retired. And I think a lot of times people don't even understand what that means, because I see a lot of people online, oh, it's nothing. Yo, when you have your number retired by a team, that is a hell of an accomplishment. Yeah. It's not the Hall of Fame, but, yo, it's almost up there. Think about this. There are only a couple players on each team that have their number retired. That means that, yo, no one could wear your jersey number, and you were that important to that franchise. I mean, AI is up there with the likes of Bobby Jones, Charles Barkley, Julius Erving, Wilt Chamberlain, Hal Greer. I mean, these guys are legends. So it basically puts him in legend status in reference to the Sixers. Now, we know he will be in the Hall of Fame soon, but this is a hell of an accomplishment to have your jersey retired. You already said where he ranks in terms of your favorite players, but where do you think AI ranks all time, and how will he be remembered in the grand scheme of things, B. Austin?
I think Allen Iverson is the third best two guard of all time.
Third
you
best?
You want me to go
third best? I already know where you're going to go. You're probably going to say Jordan, you're going to say Kobe, and then you're going to say AI.
Yeah, of course. Those are the three best at the position.
I don't know if
now,
I would have. I put a lot of thought into that.
Here's my thing. My top 10 is fluid. And I want to be righteous with my analysis and not allow my bias to get in the way, because by doing so, again, I'm disrespecting the game and the thing we love. So I don't want to overrank Allen Iverson because of what he represents to me. So I'm going to give it some time and analyze. It's easy for me to say he's the third best two guard ever. I mean,
I got you. No, I respect that.
Now, where he ranks all time, I don't want to say, because it would be really hard for me to say that he's top five. It would be really difficult.
To me, it's
like,
difficult to even call him the top three. Dev hit me up with a question. He said he just wants to know, guess what AI wearing during his ceremony? Because AI was dressed like he was in the R&B group Blackstreet.
He had a Jodeci outfit.
Yo, AI, man.
And it ain't no Ralph, though. It ain't Ralph level.
But let me ask you this. I'm asking
what's
you.
The name of your clothing line? We don't know.
Yo, I don't know what Bubba Chuck was wearing, yo. My man looked like he was about to start singing Come and Talk to Me, man. Like, But historically, he has to be up there. But there are so many great players, man. It's to the point, it's sort of like Dev was saying a couple weeks ago, like, FOH with the Mount Rushmores and the greatest list. Because it's just so many guys, and you don't want to forget anyone. But the thing I can say, when you look at the National Basketball Association, that position of two guard, it's not been that many great two guard. I mean, you have, because someone was making this argument, they were talking about D. Wade. Is D. Wade a top five two guard? And I was sitting there thinking about it, and I was looking, like, throughout. Of course, you got guys like Jerry West. You got Oscar that
not
plays
better than
literally
Jerry West.
Repossession.
Not higher on the list. He's not higher
and
on the
thing
list
is, like,
Jerry
when
West.
You, when you look at Jerry West, his accomplishments and the way he played the game, I mean,
Clyde Drexler.
I forgot about Clyde the Glide. But, I mean, still, like,
I know
Clyde the Glide, you got Jerry West.
It's real
I mean,
cool.
It's hard to place Oscar somewhere. Oscar literally played three positions. Like, I don't know where to place Oscar. I've seen his name mentioned as one of the greatest small forwards. I've also seen his name mentioned as one of the best point guards. So he literally played three positions. So I don't even know where to put him at. But the fact of the matter is, like I say with any sport, AI's name has to be mentioned. And that right there speaks for itself. Because, you know, for those who don't know, I have my critically acclaimed book is coming out. How is it critically acclaimed and it's not out yet? Don't worry about that, but it's a War Room Sports thing. And I have a whole chapter dedicated to AI, but it's not even from the standpoint of basketball, but what he meant culturally
cannot be denied.
His cultural impact might be the greatest in basketball. I mean, Michael Jordan too.
Cultural impact.
Because you have two, you have Mike and AI. I mean, if you look back, you may have Bill Russell culturally, but who do you think has a bigger impact culturally, Mike or AI?
Mike.
Think so?
Mike.
Is it arguable, though? It's arguable.
It's arguable, and I would go here. I would go here with it. Mike's impact. And it's taken me I've had to grow up as an adult. I look at Mike more objectively. He's still my favorite player. He's still number one all time. But I acknowledge the negative impact of Michael Jordan. And Michael's impact isn't all good.
Well,
the
same could be said for Bubba Chuck. As great as the impact he had, it's not all good.
I don't see really a negative impact of Allen Iverson.
We can't even really dig into that, but I'm shocked you said that. You don't think there's anything negative about AI's impact on the league?
Nah, you can knock the tattoos. You can go with the tattoos, but I would say there's negative impact with everybody has a negative and a positive. But his positive far outweighs his negative. Michael Jordan's positives are contrived because when you go beyond selling something. When you go beyond selling something, what is his impact? Mike's impact is all about selling something.
Now, the one thing I can say about AI is AI represented being who you are, not being fake, not being phony. He was who he was. He still is who he is, as Dev alluded to, coming here looking like AI stopped living. Like, he stopped growing as an individual in 97, so he's still like.
AI is who he is.
Love him or hate him, he is who he is.
Years old.
In the words of Marlo Stanfield, my name is my name, and that's exactly what Bubba Chuck represents. But with that being said, that's an interesting point. Yo, shout out to Pusha T. Yo, my name is my name. But that's an interesting debate we have. We have to take this to probably Facebook because I'm shocked you said that. I didn't think you would say that. I think that AI's impact might be right up there with Jordan, but I do think there's some more negative than, you know, you alluded to. Maybe that's your bias. Maybe it's not. Let's see what the people think. But it's time for us to get out of here. Thanks for joining us again, the War Room family. Shout out to everybody in the chat room, those on Facebook, Twitter. All the callers who called in, we apologize if we couldn't get you on air because we had great discussions going on. Tune in next week, same time, same place, for some more great sports talk. The NBA playoff race should heat up. We'll discuss that and take you around the world of sports as we always do. Until then, enjoy your week, and we'll see you right back here next time. Catch our conversations on Facebook and Twitter at War Room Sports, and go to warroomsportstv.com to catch all of our video content. Until next time, everybody, don't accept mediocrity. Be steadfast in the war against ignorance. And we'll see you chumps on top.
Holla at it.
got a G flow. KC, royalty, I'm in beast mode. 2 hours, get your game up. Who's the best in sports cap? You better name us. War room sports.
War Room Sports, www.warroomsports.com. What? Ain't no more to it.